So boardroom debate this week is, should Atari own Retro? That's the question.
Steve, what are we doing here today?
We are in the overscan, number
and
three.
Week number three
in a row. Can you believe it?
I hardly can believe it, but we're here.
We have not made fun of your big red microphone yet.
We are in the weekly overscan number three. Welcome to the boardroom. I just repeated everything again, but that's what we needed.
That's fine.
That's what I needed. Okay, so let's go quickly. Let's start this. Atari news.
Atari news in the boardroom.
In the boardroom. So, okay. Atari news, Steve.
So here's the first one. Neo Sprint. This is a fantastic looking game that Atari announced this week. This is a modern version of Atari's long-running Sprint games, which are sort of overhead racing games that literally go all the way back to 1974.
Right. It's like the second game that Atari really made.
Second real game. They made Space Race in between.
That anyone remembers.
No one remembers Space Race because it's not really a great game. But Space Race is, by the way, a lot like Freeway by Activision. It's almost the same game where you can only move up and down, except instead of rows of cars, it has an asteroid you need to, or more asteroids. I don't know. I've never played it. But this is an isometric sprint game. Why don't we show the video now?
So it's a video of Neo Sprint. It looks a lot like other Atari Recharge games, but it's a racing game.
So what the cool, I mean, there's camp pain modes and all sorts of other modes, which is really cool. But what I really like is that it has a track designer, and then you can make campaigns out of your own tracks, kind of like making your own races. It looks really cool. This is kind of Atari's Excitebike, I guess, if you think about it. But it's for up to 8 players playing at the same time.
Wait, so one thing, there was a great Sprint and Super Sprint came out on the ST, and there were very good versions of that.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, so you see a few of the Sprint games here. I'll read them off.
Right.
You know, 74, Grand Track 10, which is really a one-player racing game. And then the same year, Grand Track 20, actually Track 10, which went out and then had a bunch of technical problems and came back out as Grand Track 10. Then Grand Track 20, which was for 2 players. Then Sprint 4, which was a 4-player game, which came out in 1976. Sprint 8 came out in 1978 for 8 players all standing
the
around.
There's a genius of Sprint 8. I'll tell you what it is. So Atari was doing these wide body pinball tables at the time. They think they cost a little bit more, but I'm not sure.
Oh, a lot,
The problem was they were a wide body pinball table. Only one person could really play at a time, right? You could switch off. That costs like 50 cents. Whereas this Sprint 8 took up about the same space as a wide body pinball table, but 8 people could pay at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was you made a lot more money.
It's like a coup.
It's like a coup.
And then, right. and then in 86, there was the Super Sprint. And then there's also a sequel to this that came after. But these are all sort of overhead racing games. The new one's isometric, but these are really fun games. This is one of Atari's original, you know, this is what Indy 500 is on the Atari 2600.
Right.
This is one of Atari's originated this type of racing game. And I think it's really cool that they are bringing it back because it really is their IP. It really is their history is this type of racing game.
Right. Right. I want to get this one. Sounds really fun. I like Super Sprint is one of my favorite games.
Hot off the presses today, Atari buys Intellivision, or where the property, the Intellivision IP that is not the
IP,
Amico.
not the Amico.
And then they're,
The important thing here, that it's not the Amico.
yeah, and so then they're licensing back the Intellivision IP to the Amico company, whatever they
Right.
want to call themselves, so they can put it on the Amico, which of course they say in this press release is going to come out, but we all know the chances of that are slim to none. But Atari did pick up what is left of the intellectual property. So I know a few
Right.
things got sold off to some German company, I believe, but who knows? Maybe someday they will put out a list of what they actually got here. So we don't know what IP they own. We know that some of the details I know about how Amico acquired the Intellivision IP. I know that Keith Robinson was trying to sell it for about a $500,000 for a long time. I believe Intellivision Productions picked it up after he passed away from his family or whoever owned it for $150,000, and that's what they were basing everything off of. I don't know if Atari bought it for more or less than that. I don't feel like, I mean, the Intellivision name is interesting. The Running Man is interesting. The games like Snafu and Utopia and Cloudy Mountain, which is the non-D&D version of the D&D game.
Right.
Those are all cool things.
That scrolling asteroids-like game is really cool too, where you're not a spaceship, you're a spaceman flying, and some things you can shoot and some things you can't. It's very much the Intellivision cerebral version of the Atari joystick finger breakers. I like that one a lot. There's a lot of games where they added, I'm not going to say intelligence, but they try to add like something extra to this more expensive console to the game. There's not just a bunch of sh it's just all some games that we're all shooting, they added something extra to
But it's
for that.
very surprising to see that Atari has bought the Intellivision IP, and it'll be really cool to see what happens next.
AtariAge.com. Okay,
All right, so
so
Jeff,
I
what did you
trolled
do
through
here?
Atari Age. Okay, so I went to the I was looking for something interesting new that I hadn't seen before, and there's a guy there named Ben Larson in the 7800 forum who is creating a racing game, an overhead racing game that looks so much like so much like the Flash racing game that I created for our book. It actually uses some of the same, the cars look exactly the same. Anyway, it is an overhead game. It's called Super Pro Racers, and it's one of the 1700 games that I am looking forward to. Right now he says, this is Ben. He said, posted on May 13th, I've been holding out on you guys. I've been secretly working on a racing game, my first 7800 game. It's an overhead racing game done in 320B mode with a minimalist graphical look, more or less necessitated by 320B, which has fewer colors per scan line or
Not
per
per
sprite.
sprite, yeah.
You can do a full one player versus computer or split screen head-to-head two player mode. There's three cars total in each race, so in one player mode there'll be two CPU opponents and two other and in two player mode one, and it's an overhead scrolling racing game. There's nothing like it on 7800. There's actually, it reminds me a little bit of Supercars for the Atari ST or the Amiga,
Superbug.
like,
What about Superbug?
oh, and Superbug 4 from Atari.
Yeah.
The cars even look a little like Superbug, but Superbug only drove one car. It was a driving game, not a racing game. Like you never raced in the version Superbug I played. Anyway, that's my current one. That's my current the Atari Age post, and I thought that was the most interesting one to me this week.
Very cool.
Excitement of the week.
All right.
Oh, I have another one right
What
here.
is your excitement of the week, Jeff?
Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Atari 8-bit VBXE. VBXE is an add-on board that piggybacks into the ANTIC socket on an XE machine only. It provides RGB out and up to 1024 colors on the screen from a 21-bit palette at the same time. So these are
Wow.
the modes that it gives you: 320 by 240 with 1024 colors, 640 by 480i. So it's really 640 by, was it
Interlaced.
40 interlaced with 64 colors and 80 column text modes and a bunch of other stuff. So what this allows people is to make games for the 8-bit, the Atari 8-bit, that look like Amiga games or whatever, basically. You know, Atari ST or Amiga are better because all these colors on the screen at once. So this is Missile Command Arcade was the example one that I played. It's and it's by Anschutz, Weisberger, and Anschutz.
Oh, it looks exactly like Missile Command.
Basically, it's the arcade version of Missile Command, right?
So they're probably not doing it in BASIC anymore. They're probably doing
this is an assembly language game. It is a great-looking version of Missile Command for the Atari 8-bit. It looks just like the arcade version. And maybe a little bit better in some places. With it. I think the cities are multicolored. Things like that.
Very cool. I mean, I have a question, though. Like, this is cool. You know, the idea that there's an add-on board. But, like, how many people have it? And how many people have access to it?
Steve, I just played it in Altera. So it's easy to play in emulation.
Okay.
So you in emulation, in Altera, you go to the hardware section, you add the VBXE as hardware, and then the games just start working.
Okay.
So that's all you have to do. So to play it, it's all in Altera, and it's very simple to do. And when I make my extra video about it, I'll do a little explanation about how to play it, how to set it up and play it.
Well, here is my excitement of the week, which is kind of related to last time's excitement of the week, which is about the Atari 2600 movie cart. But I was just able to get it done today where I took the video for our theme song and I converted it to the Atari 2600 movie cart and then recorded it being played on Atari 2600. So
that's beautiful.
We can show this. The audio people, you got to go to the video. Obviously, got to go to YouTube too.
They'll hear some of the audio.
To see
that. Right, here is our intro video for Into the Vertical Blank, playing directly on the Atari 2600 through the Atari 2600 movie cart.
How does the audio work?
I don't know.
How much is it storing on this cartridge?
It's a 4 gigabyte SD card.
Okay. Got it. So it can actually takes a pretty good video and it streams it through the 2600 to your TV. That's pretty awesome.
I feel like it's like a demo machine. You know how the guys make the demos and basically they're streaming, you know,
yeah,
they're streaming like video and stuff to make like really right. cool demos. I think it's very similar to that concept.
Whatever it is, and I think that sounds right. I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
whatever the tech is, this is just cool. It's 2600
again.
We
talked about it last week. I feel like it's useless, but like useless in a way that it's amazing at the same time, right? And that's what's so cool about it is it doesn't really have like there's no reason why you'd want to do this except like. I mean, if you had a table at a retro convention and you had your video playing, like this is why I did. I'm like, oh, we've got our video playing here at the imaginary Into the Vertical Blank table at the retro convention, and it's playing on a CRT from the Atari 2600. Wouldn't that be awesome, right?
Yes.
It's in a way like having an Atari Video Music there that kind of in a similar vein, like. Something so cool but so like not useful that it shows that it's just super it's just pure fun. That's what I mean.
It's cool, not useful, but awesome.
Pure fun.
Cool and awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess in that way it is useful.
Our video.
All right. So
I don't think so all I wanted to talk about in this video is last week we talked I talked about the Zone Warrior versus Amiga. I actually put that video up. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about what the new section of the site. So we have a new section for overscan extras, and that new section is where we're going to put extra video that goes along with these overscans. So that playlist will have all of these videos, the videos we talked about. It won't have the videos of other people's stuff. It comes from, if the video comes from their site. So we're not going to copy anything with our videos about it or our extra video we create for these. The example up was Zone Warrior, and for this video in 2 days, I'll be putting up the Missile Command video about how to do the VBXE and how to play VBX games in Altera and how to play Missile Command Plus or Missile Command Arcade. VBX.
Very cool.
Feedback. Atari Crypts feedback on Zone Warrior. Oh, actually, on the video, on the top 50 Atari ST run and gun horizontal shooter video that I created. That video, Atari Crypt talked about, and that one had a game in it called Ball, and he said Atari Crypt, Ball sucks in my humble opinion. Sly Spy has potential. I enjoyed that. By the way, Zone Warrior, LOL. Great video compilation. And I love Atari Crypt. He's a cool dude. His name's Steve also. There's a lot of Steves out
there. Yeah, too many.
In Atari land. Yes. No, just enough.
So my question is Zone Warrior really as bad as you think it is? Because when I looked at it, I kind of thought it would look good to me, but...
It's not the game. See, the thing is, I like Zone Warrior as a game. It's fun. You get the three... It's a little bit like Contra for the Atari ST, kind of. It's the year it came out, and the ST getting a crap Amiga port was just the example. That's all. Zone Warrior, in my countdown, it's number 25 of the top 50 run-and-gun games on the ST.
It's
not a bad game.
But it kind of, when you say crap ST port, it makes it seem like it's not used for anything. And it is.
But actually, see, that's the thing. If it came from the ST and went to the Amiga, they would have called it a crap ST port of a decent game.
Right.
See, it's decent, right? It's fun. It's a fun game. It's number 25 on the countdown, the top 50. I have 75 games to put in the top 50 countdown. So it's better than 50 of them.
Okay.
Anyway, but yes, crap SE port. Maybe I was using that as being a little inflammatory on purpose. That's all.
Okay.
Okay. So, here is the other feedback I got. An email from Laurent Poulain. He's a French dude. He said, hey, what made our favorite machine so great? And he went on to send me a link to his video. It's in French about the Atari 8-bit. And he goes through all these great games on the Atari 8-bit and how they're made. And the video's in French, but you could turn on subtitles. And so I did. And this is what I got out of it. I'm not going to play it here because people should go see it. But the video is in French. It translates easily into... in YouTube, it covers how these games were made and what video graphics modes they did and how they were created in detail, like how the code was done. Like he shows like how the blocks are broken up and how the tiles are made of Boulder Dash, Ford Apocalypse, which is tiles with sprites or players, and Moon Patrol's parallax scrolling in a game called Whodunit.
How cool!
And we'll put the link in the show notes. People should go check this out. He's it's in French, but easily translated. And like I said, so this is a really cool. Thank you, Laurent, for sending that email. It's a great video.
Creator spotlight. So who do you think it's going to be this time, Jeff? What creator are we going to spotlight this week?
Ferg!
Yes.
And his Dragon Stomper song.
So who is Ferg? Ferg is the, is...
Robert Ferguson.
Robert Ferguson, who does the long-running Atari 2600 game-by-game podcast. Ferg came back this week, I think after 3 or 4 months, because he's been having some trouble getting podcasts done. You know, it's understandable, but we're so happy to see Ferg back. And he covered Dragon Stomper, which is probably one of... If not my favorite, one of my favorite Atari 2600 games, right there in the top 10.
The game that we spent Dragon Stomper and Raiders of the Lost Ark, we spent the most time on, and we completed them both. Those were the completable Atari 2600 games besides Adventure that I know we completed.
Yeah, we completed both of those along with Adventure. And, I mean, I'll be honest with you, those are the games I wanted to play on the Atari 2600. Those types of games, you know, finding a good adventure game, finding a good long-term game where you and I could sit down and try to figure it out. I was hoping a game like Riddle the Sphinx would be that way, but it really wasn't. Like, I really always wanted something deeper and more elaborate. Ever since we visited that computer store before we got our Atari 2600, and we got that catalog of computer games, and we're like, oh, these are amazing in-depth computer games. Then we got Atari VCS, and everything, it was fun, but everything was very light.
Well,
everything
we'd also played on Eric Bartz's Apple IIe, Plus, and Apple IIe, so we knew what all the games could be.
Yeah,
2600 disappointed us slightly, well, just in the breadth of the depth of the games. But
one of the things that disappointed me about the 2600 was the Activision games. And don't get me wrong, I love Activision games, but every Activision game that we got at the beginning, from Tennis and Laser Blast and Dragster and Freeway, I'll say those are the first set. Those first games that we got had really nice graphics, but they did one thing really well. But in doing that one thing really well, they were not very deep, and I wanted something deep. That didn't come till Pitfall.
I actually, I love Tennis, though. I think of those, Tennis is the most deep.
Agreed.
Deep, in a sense, you could play a full game of Tennis.
So Ferg goes through every Atari 2600 game ever made. With his shows are super elaborate. I'm sure anyone who listens to this, not anyone, but many people listen to this may already listen, but just so you know, he goes through in fine detail every Atari 2600 game. He goes through the instructions, the versions, the lore. If there were interviews, he finds like interesting information. He's done a few interviews himself.
Talks about the protos of them.
Talks about the prototypes. He talks about the boxes. He talks about the releases. You know, everything you'd need to know. And then he takes more than half his show to play feedback and read feedback messages from the entire community. He'll basically read every single one that people send.
Most likely it's the most popular, longest run, not the longest running because the Antic came up first, but Atari-related podcast out there. It's the most well-liked, the most well-loved, and the most popular and the best Atari-related podcast that there is.
Yeah, so he doesn't have a time limit for his shows. Some are like sprawling two-hour shows. Some are short, depending on how much feedback he gets, how interesting the game is. But one thing he did in this last one, and he kind of made his own parody song. So it's a cover kind of parody of Liam Lynch's United States or whatever. From, I think, came out like 2000.
And I'm like, whatever.
If you click on the audio bit over here, you can hear Furix now. The last one we did, we got a copyright strike on the video. So I don't know.
Keep it to like 5 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever.
But go ahead and play Furix, and then we can see how much of it we can play. Well, you can play it, but his song is, his vocal performance is fantastic in this thing. In the song, it's utterly fantastic. So if you can't hear it here, you should go listen to the podcast and hear it.
Just another day in the life of the Dragon Stomper. I went down to the church and saw a monkey. She was all like, "Oh no, a monkey!" And I'm like, "Dragon Stomper."
Okay, we are at the boardroom debate, Steve.
The boardroom debate. Maybe we need like a little jingle for each one of these like sections.
Think of something.
So that like people who are listening on audio can get the audio, like, oh, audio cue. Now they're to
well,
Atari Age News. I don't
there
know.
There in the podcast version on Spotify and of course in the video, you can select what chapter you want. Between each one, we could put in a ding jingle, but I don't know if you want to put in like boardroom debate da, 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 or something like
I don't
that.
Know. I don't know. We didn't even jingle. Okay, but here's what's funny about this one. So boardroom debate this week is, should Atari own retro? That's the question. Now, I made this up after the first boardroom debate in week one, and I was kind of trying to come up with boardroom debates. And this was long before Atari decided they were going to buy or announce they were going to buy Intellivision today. But part of it is the boardroom debate is, you know, I got a list of, I have here pictures of Midway Arcade Treasures, which are all the Midway games that right. Midway owns, that Midway, that Atari Games had, that Midway bought, that now Warner Brothers owns, Activision Anthology, Intellivision Lives, the ColecoVision Flashback. I'm sure there's other, Vectrex, someone mentioned today, oh, wow. too. But the idea is, you know, should Atari own retro the way that they've been going? And I think after today's purchase of Intellivision, it's almost like the answer is yes.
Well, should Atari own Golden Age retro?
Okay, that's what I mean. Golden Age retro.
Right. So, yes.
So imagine this. Imagine if Atari owned Magnavox, if they purchased the Fairchild, suffered the Fairchild, the Bally, you know, the Arcadia, what was that? Arcadia 2001. Yeah. What was the thing that came out like 1982? What if they owned, and what if they went and bought, you know, some of the software for, or the British computer consoles, like or not consoles, you know, the computers. I mean, what if they owned Golden Age Retro in a way that then they would re-release all of this stuff?
Well, them owning all of the Midway stuff would be really interesting because Midway has all of the Atari game stuff that's post-Warner.
Right, which is what I said.
No, I know that. I'm just saying that would be really good because, but I'm just saying, like, it's not just Golden Age because it's golden, like, retro.
It's golden into silver age, right?
Golden to silver. It's just anything non-Nintendo or Sega, really. Like, because they really can't. Those are ongoing companies that are doing really well. But Activision is not. Activision is just sitting on this stuff, and Electronic Arts is just sitting on everything they own. So, yeah, I mean, if Atari could get the rights to put those out, they should own that. They're doing a great job with it. I think they should. And the purchase of the Intellivision rights to those games is absolutely fantastic. And this goes a long way towards them, you know, having golden and maybe, comes after golden, silver?
Like, I don't know. I'd say silver, but I don't know. I don't know what you'd call it.
Just non-Nintendo or Sega retro.
Yeah. I mean, there's also tons of computer game companies that have slipped into oblivion, like Broderbund, you know, Synapse, of course, you know, games from Absolute and Alkalade, and, you know, people like that would be interesting. SSI.
Alkalade's really interesting. The not the Video Game Newsroom Time Machine, obviously they'll get there, but the They Create Worlds just finished up two episodes on Accolade,
and it's, that's fascinating. Really
interesting, fascinating thing that happened to them, and how they, I always thought that was, when I went to the store and saw all the NES cartridges and saw that, like, Accolade is making games, all these Access, or all these companies from the United States were making these games for this Japanese console, and they were ignoring, you know, the Atari ones, I was always sort of angry, but I mean, they were doing it to survive. I know that, right? I was just,
it was a different, we didn't understand the economics of it or anything. We just wanted people to support Atari, but that's because we liked Atari. Like, to us, Atari was the golden age, and it kind of felt like the other companies were being disloyal, but that was stupid. They were just doing what they needed to survive. But so I guess the answer is a given. We believe that Atari should own Golden Age Retro, and they should maybe buy the assets for ColecoVision.
With the companies,
right?
That they are combined together right now, Atari doing their stuff, with the various companies, the other companies they purchase that make content, right? I think that all of these assets, including ColecoVision and Intellivision, obviously now Activision, I think all of those would be hard-pressed to find a better curator of their content, right? Like, I think
especially Coleco.
Especially Coleco.
I think, you know, I look at, I think Coleco is the, is sort of on par with Atari for how much their games are worth. Actually, Vectrex as well.
Vectrex, yeah.
I mean, the rare cartridges for Coleco, rare cartridges for the Atari and Vectrex are on par. I mean, they're not as expensive as the NES ones because there's not as many people that want to collect them. Right. But if the people that do want to collect them, you know, there's games that are getting up to 100, 150, 300.
What type of games, you know, go that? Just give me an example. You
know, well, an example, like a $150 game would be for both the Coleco and the Atari that I found out this week by accident was when I went to the retro store and I thought I found a copy of Qbert Cubes for the Atari 2600, but it turned out that it was for the ColecoVision. I looked in my little game collecting app and both are worth $100 to $150 depending on who's buying it. So but
didn't you buy the ColecoVision Cube?
I did. Or not? I bought it. And so is Frogger 3 Deep. You know, Frogger 2 3 Deep is one of those that is up there, rare and expensive. Wow. And there's some that are even more, but I'm just talking about, you know, cartridges that aren't like super, super rare, but that are rare from when they came out. It came out in the end of the era. But what I'm thinking is like that, and then Vectrex would be really interesting for them to own as well. Same with Epix. Epix, I think, owns all the Epix content. They also own the StarPath Supercharger content as well. That would be cool for Atari to have. I mean, I don't know if what holding companies own this stuff or not, but I think it's interesting that Atari is trying to find the things that they could buy and turn into collections.
Yeah, after the last couple of years, except for some of the hiccups with hardware cartridges and things like that, if we're talking about, let's just say that they get that all figured out. If you're talking about people making cartridges of older stuff and people making collections or redoing them, I think that the collection of talent that Atari has acquired can do a really good job with it. I think so.
I would love to see an Intellivision Plus.
Yeah.
That comes with the cartridge with, you know, 10 Intellivision games and then allows you to play Intellivision cartridges, new and old, and maybe they can get their cartridge pipeline going where they can actually build some new carts or build the carts from people. There's a very healthy homebrew community for the Intellivision. Well, there's a very healthy homebrew community for the ColecoVision too, and for Vectrex.
Yeah, I think that the only scary thing that I would think about those systems would be there are, just like with Atari, VCS and 7800, there are a lot of great arcade ports that have come out for those the unlicensed ones, those guys would be SOL because Atari can't really put those out.
Right. I think at the same time, the ColecoVision is difficult because the ColecoVision is mostly licensed games.
Right. It's mostly
from licenses. You know, Atari would have to buy, they do own Frenzy, so they could release that for sure, right? They do own some of the games that came out from Atari games. That's a good
point, though.
Atari Soft. So they do own some of the Atari Soft games, so.
So how about ColecoVision and Intellivision versions of the IP that Atari owns if they're going to do those two? So say ColecoVision never got an official version of Berserk. Well, someone make a Z80 version of it, right? Or someone make a 10-bit Intellivision. I think ColecoVision was 16 or 10-bit or whatever it was, right? But I mean, it would be cool to see those if they could get some other ones that are actual IP and then make some sort of turn IP they own into games for those too. That'd be kind of cool.
The other thing they could do, which I think is interesting, is make a Retron 5 that accepts Atari, Intellivision, Coleco, etc. carts, yes. And maybe even Magnavox, which I still think is interesting. Yeah, so that's a Retron 4. And throw the Fairchild in there.
No,
5.
You need 5200 still needs a
cartridge. Oh, 5200, which has not been done. Okay, so you got the 2600 and the 7800 together, 5200, Intellivision, Coleco, Magnavox.
So I think maybe you don't need 2600 in there anymore because there's multiple ways to do it. So instead you do.
Yeah, but if you're going to have a system that plays all of them, it'd be great if you could do 2600 and 7800.
Great, you're right, but I would like to see like the ones that haven't been touched yet, the Intellivisions. And ColecoVision, obviously there is a cartridge based one, so great, Atari's in there. That'd be, but I mean ColecoVision, there is that ColecoVision I always tried to get one, but I could never get one. The cartridge,
like ColectorVision or something.
ColectorVision Phoenix, but something like that that plays them. But in FPGA as long as an emulator could play all the games properly, it'd be fine. Like I don't care.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of, and this is why I was saying the 2600, the 7800, plus the 5200, plus the Intellivision, plus the ColecoVision, plus Magnavox. Okay, the reason why I say that is the box would also be the next generation Atari VCS. So it would play cartridges, but would also be able to run the VCS software.
Download emulators. Games.
And so you get the best of all the world. Like to me, ultimately, I mean, at least for the Atari platforms, I'd like to see them do an Atari VCS that supports JAG, Lynx, 5200, 2600, 7800, and is the VCS at the same time.
With the way that the hardware prices for the mini PCs and sort of these smaller machines has gone down, you could like a redoing something that will still run the Atari VCS spec, the VCS 400, 800 spec. Be turned into a PC of some cart slots that could play all of these like a Retron. If the new VCS was able to do something like that, and then obviously extender cartridges or whatever, so you could play other platforms or make another one, that would be like where Atari should go. Like I think that what you're saying, the VCS with the cartridge slots, yes,
that's what I'm
that
saying.
That owns Golden Era Retro right there.
Right, and then they could sell a bunch of controllers because the controllers are going to be different. Make them all Bluetooth controllers.
You know, the current Retron 5 comes with sort of a lame controller, but I still use it. That kind of can be used for all games, but then you can plug in your own controllers that you get from other sources too.
Right. I would want them to do some Bluetooth recreations of the Intellivision controller, the ColecoVision one, which is interesting. But I think, you know, maybe it's our pipe dream that Atari could own Golden Age Retro.
Okay, but guess what?
I think
we had pipe dreams before. We had pipe dreams before. Most of them have, except for an ST Mini or a JAG Mini, but those probably are coming. I mean, just getting to, when we started this podcast, there was no way to play Food Fight except for a dirty old 7800 cartridge and a 7800 that maybe plugged in with AV cables. Now there's multiple ways to do that. So never say never. I think that this can happen and it should.
Well, I mean, we've speculated on some of these things for a long time. We recorded an entire podcast about some of our speculations that we never released. Maybe we'll do that as part of one of these time machine boardroom debates.
How about we'll go back and just talk about a couple of them? And every once in a while, you know, and
maybe next time or one of the
times we'll add a time machine segment. How about that?
Yeah, maybe we can go back and re-talk about that specific thing I'm referring to, the VGS 8200 that we came up with about 20 years ago.
Okay,
that we thought would be awesome.
I was going to ask you, Steve. So, two percentages from you, the percentage chance you think Atari can do this, and the percentage chance you think they will do this, and that the will doing this means creating the multi-system VCS that accepts cartridges of a bunch of types.
Or just start buying these. I think, the chance that they can buy some of these other sets of IP, I think Midway and Activision and Electronic Arts are going to be harder, but some of the other ones like Magnavox and maybe even Fairchild or some of those other ones actually could be much easier. I think that that having a collection of Golden Age games, Activision, which also I think they also own a Magic and Midway.
They don't own a Magic. Own a Magic. No, that was just a license
deal.
That's just a license deal.
That's right. The guy who made it owned it. That's right. I forgot about that. I think there's a 99% chance that they will buy more companies and do more of this. I think to create the cartridge console that we described, that would be the actual ultimate, you know, with Atari VCS, because I really think the VCS is an interesting idea. If they added the cartridge slots, I would actually buy. I think it would be a no-brainer sell to me.
The reason the VCS has to be there is because you need an Atari-owned system to play the reimagined games. You can't rely on there always being Steam, right? And so they have to have their own ecosystem to do it. Games could be the same, but they have to have their own place to play.
I would say release them on, you know, SD cards and make them, you know, their own sort of cartridge system for the new games, but they could do that too. But I was going to say that the percentage chance that they will make just an Atari console, that's just Atari, like let's just say 2600 plus added to the VCS, I think there's actually a fairly good chance of them doing something like that. Like, I think it's almost a no-brainer for them to combine the 2600 plus and the VCS into a next, the 2600 plus and yeah, and the VCS into the next version of their console, an upgraded VCS 800. Yeah. I think there's a really good chance something like that might happen, maybe 80%. I think the chance of them making a multi-cart console with all the Atari carts, I think there's probably a 25% chance. I think there's a really good chance they'll make a Jaguar console that accept carts. I think there's a really good chance, maybe 60 or 70%. I think there's a 60 or 70% chance they'll make a Lynx console, but they'll have to license their games back for it. Maybe a Lynx Jag combo console is interesting as well.
Yeah.
I think the chance that they'll make a multi-system console is really, really low. Like, 5%.
Yeah. That's that they don't own. That they don't own.
Yeah. Well, no, of the ones they own. So they buy the Intellivision, even if they buy Coleco, then make it a multi-system console. I still think they'll keep it they'll keep the barriers up between them.
The Chinese.
Although I think it'd be fun.
Sure. The one thing I would like to see them do if they buy these, no matter what they do in the future when it comes to creating these packs and these cartridges and the 400 minis and stuff like that, is I want them to once that hardware is out, I want them to have a platform where you can buy that software in an emulated form and in the same experience on the VCS. So, and that's just a little bit aside, because say Atari 400 mini comes out, they sell, I don't know, 50,000 of them, no more are made, but that software to play on the 400 mini and the 25 games that were included on it, I think they should put that out for the VCS so that you could buy the 400 mini pack and it just plays there. And you should be able to buy that 10 game cartridge for the 2600 plus. You should buy whatever they do for the Intellivision. And you know what I mean? Like those should be available, because right now the audience is limited by that hardware, and it's just kind of expensive. I think that there would be a good chance when the VCS comes out again as this new platform, that if you can't plug things in, I want to buy that experience. You know, I want to put that experience on my VCS.
I think it's fascinating that they kept the VCS going, and there are some loyal people who have a VCS.
Yeah, I know.
And I think the Food Fight game is still exclusive to the VCS, the new Food Fight game. I was at my friend's house and I saw it. It's actually a pretty impressive little game. I don't understand why it hasn't gone to other platforms, but it is interesting. So because they've kept it going, I really think we're going to see a new version, and I really think we're going to see a new version that has a 2600 slot for the 2600 plus. And I also think some of these titles that have been coming out from Digital Eclipse, you know, the museum titles, mm-hmm. are going to start coming out for the VCS. I think one of them did, Atari 50 did, but I don't think the other one has yet.
I think some of them might have, but we'll have to check on that. But yeah, if they haven't, they're probably on the way.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go back. Should Atari own Golden Age Retro,
yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As of today, and the moves they're making, I don't think there's better hands for it to be in than who has it now.
I would, I'd like to see Mike Mika's team take on whatever.
Me too.
Okay, until next time, Steve.
Out of the overscan and
into the vertical blank.
Into the vertical blank.
Into the vertical blank.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Coca-Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.